go get his daughter.
Oh, good evening, everyone. It is, I'd like to open the Senate Committee on Health Care. It is February 11th. I'm sorry that we've been delayed. I am really sorry, and I apologize for that because every one of these bills is important. I do want to let you know that we are not going to work session Senate Bill 1531. We are going to, we haven't seen the latest amendment, it has been changed drastically from the meeting that Senator Bates had yesterday. Since there's about three consensus issues on Senate Bill 1531, the opportunity to put them into another bill, another CCO bill in Ways and Means, that will happen. So we're not opening a work session on Senate Bill 1531. I would like to open a work session on Senate Bill 1504.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1504 had a public hearing the early part of February, February 2nd. It enacts an interstate physical therapy licensure compact, declares an emergency effective on passage. During our public hearing, we heard from the Department of Justice concerns about constitutionality and Oregon's liability under the compact. The parties got together and came up with a technical amendment on the bill. The amendment that is before the committee is the Dash 2 amendment, which creates a fund which levies the assessments, would be paid to the Interstate Commission. The fund money is from fees and would be capped at the discretion of the State Board of Physical Therapy, permits the State Board of Physical Therapy to adopt rules of the Interstate Commission as board rules, and removes the option to claim damages against the state. It also has conforming amendments. It also, since the Physical Therapy Board is a semi-independent board, we had to create a different type of account rather than an account in the state treasury, and that amendment does that. We have a no revenue on the Dash 2s, and we have a minimal fiscal impact on the Dash 2 amendment, Madam Chair.
I want to did I open a work session?
Yes, you did.
Yes, you did.
I want to thank DOJ, Department of Justice. I want to thank Legislative Council. Yes. And I also want to thank Inga Deckert for working together so quickly to come up with amendments that we feel will not be unconstitutional.
Madam Chair, was the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 1504?
Senator Steiner Hayward moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments into Senate Bill 1504. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1504 as amended by the Dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hayward moves Senate Bill 1504 to the floor. Did you say to Ways and Means?
Does it go to Ways and Means?
No.
It doesn't go to Ways and Means?
No, it doesn't. No, that's
okay.
The next
that's
one.
This one.
Sorry.
With the Dash 2 amendments.
Okay. Senator Steiner Hayward, I'm sorry, it's been a long day. Senate Bill has moved Senate Bill 1504 to the floor with the Dash 2 amendments with a due press recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Pino?
Aye.
Yes.
Senator Steiner Hayward?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Excused.
And Chair Montes Anderson?
Aye. Motion carries. And is there anyone that would like to carry it?
I'd be honored if nobody else wants to, but it's fine. Yeah. If
Senator Steiner Hayward will carry the bill. With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1504 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1559.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1559 as amended by the Dash 4 amendments to the floor with a due
withdraw
your
motion.
Member?
Well, but do you have a motion?
Yeah, I think we should consider Dash 5 since we were doing that before, right?
Okay.
Sure. I'm going to take my motion off the table, Madam Chair.
I'll move the dash fives.
Senator Knope moves the dash five amendments into Senate Bill 1559. And could you, that is the sampling bill.
Amendment, yes.
Amendment.
Madam Chair, we do not have the paperwork for the dash five amendments, no revenue or fiscal on the dash fives.
Okay. Clerk will call the roll on the dash five amendments. No.
Senator Knope?
Aye.
Senator Courtney?
No.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Yes.
And Chair Mona Sanders?
No. Amendment fails.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Knope.
Can we move the dash six amendments?
Senator Knope moves the dash six amendments into Senate Bill 1559. And I just wanted to put on the record, Department of Revenue really helped me on this and in giving information, and I want to put that on the record. And I know I have it here, sorry. Okay, basically, she said that a tiered rate based on inventory of products subject to license or gross sales of products subject to license makes, let's see, no, that's not the right one. Just a minute. Verifying numbers would be an administrative burden and increase the cost to administer a license program if we introduce Amendment 6 or incorporated Amendment 6. Also, it was given to me, convenience stores typically have a higher volume of cigarette and tobacco product sales than a big box store. And so those were the two issues that were troublesome to me. Any comments on that?
Well, Madam Chair, what the dash six basically do is prevent, okay, you got a small store out in wherever, and they hire a new clerk, and somewhat untrained, and they accidentally make a sale to a minor, okay? Not intentional, not deliberate, but accidental. What this bill does is basically say, you know, it's okay to screw up once or twice, okay, without fear of losing your license. The way it is now, they could pull a license for an inadvertent error by a untrained clerk, and I think we need to have some protection for the business in that.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
I appreciate Senator Cruz's concern, and I too would not want to see that happen. But the intention all along was to have this function in the same way that liquor licenses function, and a single violation such as that would not result in revocation or suspension of a liquor license. It might result in a fine or something like that, but it wouldn't result in suspension or revocation. So I don't think that's of concern. I also have a concern on page 1, line 7 of the dash 6 amendments, where it says that fees adopted under subsection 3B of this section may not exceed $250. We heard significant testimony when we first heard this bill during January Ledge Days, and then about the concern about putting a fee in statute. And we made it clear, we made changes in the underlying bill to say that the fees should be calculated to appropriately represent the cost of administering the program and the enforcement and the education, so that we don't have retailers inadvertently making mistakes or clerks inadvertently making mistakes because we can't afford to do education. And I think it's inappropriate for taxpayer dollars to subsidize the cost of these licenses, and we cannot know that $250 will cover the actual cost of the licensure program, including enforcement and education. So I have a significant concern about that aspect of this amendment as well, Madam Chair.
One nice thing about the base bill we will have a great opportunity for education and training, particularly with all stores, but in particular the small and convenience stores. I'm very confident that the selling to minors will decrease with this licensure bill. Any other comments? Okay, we are now voting on the dash sixes. Will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Steiner-Hayward?
No.
Senator Knope?
Aye.
Senator Courtney?
No.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Yes.
And Chair Montes Anderson?
Aye. No. Motion fails.
I heard not.
It's been a long day. Okay.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1559 as amended with the dash four amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred but to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Steiner-Hayward moves Senate Bill
59
as amended with the dash one
dash four
amendments. I'm sorry, everybody. Dash four amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference. Clerk will call the roll.
Well, Madam Chair, first.
Discussion? Yeah. Yes, okay.
Let me say this is just a continuation of what we spent the last 6 hours doing.
I'm really excited about all of the good hard work that a number of people did on this. The tobacco industry was wonderful. The grocers were terrific. We've been working on this since September. Multnomah County was terrific, and we made a lot of concessions. The Heart Association, Public Health, Lung, all giving strong support, and I know that the Heart, Lung, and Nurses Association wanted no preemption, and of course we came up with a compromise, and I'm very happy with the bill the way it is at this point in time. Any other discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Knope?
No.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator Steiner-Hayward?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cruz?
No.
And Chair Montes Anderson?
Aye. Motion carries, and Senator Steiner-Hayward.
It goes to Ways and Means.
Oh, it goes to Ways and Means. Never mind. It's on its way to Ways and Means. All right.
We'll take care of it when it gets there.
Okay. I'm going to open, and Senator Courtney, thank you for being with us. I apologize for Senator Shields. He had to go back to home because he had to get, for family reasons, his daughter primarily. So with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1568. Sandy.
Madam Administrator, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1568 prohibits discrimination based on age, expected length of life, present or predicted disability, degree of medical dependency, or quality of life in determination of medical services covered by state medical assistance program in the coverage under medical retainer practice and an issuance of a health benefit plan. Applies to medical retainer practices and a health benefit plans that are in force on January 2nd, 2017, declares an emergency effective on passage. And there is a dash one that removes the language relating to the Health Evidence Commission and clarifies that medical management techniques are not impacted by the bill. And you probably want to have these.
So let's start out with Jim Gardner, Ann Murray, and B.J. Kavner. And thanks, everyone, for waiting so long.
Which one?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner, representing the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers Association of America, or PhRMA. And those of you on this committee are quite familiar with this issue, since we have been working on it for several years now. And I would simply say that sometimes the progress toward ensuring non-discrimination can be a long and winding course, which this one certainly is, and we very much appreciate, Madam Chair, your willingness to notice a hearing and a possible work session on the bill. Senate Bill 1568 is really a pretty simple piece of legislation, and what it does is to codify the Section 1302 protections against health discrimination that are currently in the ACA. It does that, and then it extends those same protections to traditional Medicaid and to the commercial health insurance market. Right now, they apply to the Medicaid expansion population and to the exchange lives on the exchange plans. That's what the current federal law does. As this committee knows, I think, pretty well, and it's something we've been talking about for several years now, those protections become waivable by CMS in 2017. And one of the key purposes of this bill is to ensure, as a matter of state law, that those protections are permanent. Another purpose is to extend them to, as I mentioned, the traditional Medicaid population and the commercial market, on the theory that they're good public policy. It's simply good public policy to insure against discrimination in those respects. The Dash 1 amendment, which we would commend to your attention, reflects concerns that were brought to us by the governor's office, and they basically delete the provisions that relate to HERC, because there was concern that this might interfere with the HERC prioritization process, and they also provide that nothing in the bill will prevent either CCOs or carriers from utilizing reasonable medical management techniques. That, too, reflects a federal regulation that was adopted precisely to ensure that the concerns, for instance, that were expressed by the director of OHA did not materialize. And it has had that effect. The one thing that, and you have heard, I know, concerns expressed about this bill. We think we've addressed them, but I want to kind of go over why I think that is the case. The first thing I want to note is that the CCOs have been living with this provision in the form of the federal law for several years now. And none of the problems that were anticipated or projected in, for instance, the director's letters, none of those have materialized. There has not been a problem with medical management. There has not been a problem that I know is of concern to at least one member of this committee with end-of-life care. And the Dash 1 amendments make it clear that those that same federal clarification should apply and will apply in the context of the state law. The other issue that has been raised is HCV patients. Will this result in unsustainable costs? And that issue really is preempted by recent guidance that's very clear and comprehensive that has been issued by CMS. The other thing that I wanted to make clear to this committee is that we were advised late in the process that OMA had concerns about the applicability of the bill to medical retainer practices, and we, if the bill moves to Ways and Means, as we would hope that it will, we will propose an amendment that would delete the inclusion of medical retainer practices in the bill. That was never really our intent. It was LC's kind of idea, and so we're comfortable taking that out. We also want to address specifically one of the issues, which I think is simply an honest mistake on the part of the OHA director, that the 1302 provisions in the ACA are non-waivable. It is very clear from CMS documents that those are indeed waivable. It's incontestable, and I can supply the committee staff with that documentation. I believe what the director was thinking of in that discussion are the Section 1557 anti-discrimination provisions, which are not at issue in this bill, not replicated in the language, and those are traditional civil rights type of protections about discrimination on the basis of race, color, national origin, and so forth. Those are not waivable. But the 1302 provisions, which prohibit discrimination on the basis of age, expected length of life, present or predicted disability, degree of medical dependency, or quality of life, those are waivable, and that's one of the rationales for the bill. Again, we think that with the Dash 1 amendments, we've really taken what might be some legitimate objections to this bill out of play. We've followed the lead of the feds, of CMS, in doing that. We would ask that you consider moving the bill to Ways and Means for further consideration so that we can make that amendment, taking out medical retainer practices. And finally, see this issue resolved in favor of Oregon patients. It is, as I said at the beginning, it has been a long, long and winding road to this point. And I really want to commend the committee for the courage to undertake what's a very difficult issue in a time when you have so many things on your plate, like the stuff today, and giving it serious consideration. It's really an honor to have you give it that consideration, and it's something that I think you can do to advance the cause of anti-discrimination for all Oregon patients.
Thank you, Jim. Is your individual
piece or no? Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ann Murray with Bristol Myers Squibb, and as I indicated on the sign-in sheet, I don't have prepared testimony for you, but I'm happy to answer any specific questions that we've already spoken of.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is B.J. Kavanaugh, not B.J. Sith. And although some may think of me as I am not the Dark Lord, thank you. You guys needed a laugh. It's been a long day.
It has been a very long day.
It has. And you know, we very much appreciate your work, and we very much appreciate you being here. And so I will make this as brief as possible. On behalf of the 12 organizations that are listed on this sheet, on behalf of my own organization, 1 in 4 Chronic Health, the National Patient Advocate Foundation, the Hemophilia Foundation, Cascade AIDS Project, the HIV Alliance of Eugene, the Oregon Health Equity Alliance, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, the Arthritis Foundation, Disability Rights Oregon, the Oregon Urological Society, I knew that was going to slip me up, the American Cancer Society of Oregon, and the Caring Ambassadors Project, we ask you to please move this bill along. This bill has had a lot of questions about it, and what we are simply seeking to do is extend the protections that patients currently have in the Affordable Care Act to a greater number of Oregonians. We feel this is in keeping with the provisions and the values of the Triple Aim. This is critically important to patients. The patients and the organizations who represent these patients, these are the people who were not able to get care prior to the Affordable Care Act. And so the idea of something which can be waivable having an impact on patients is, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, is of critical importance to us in moving forward in the future. This really is a matter of life and death. If you will allow me, I wanted to just briefly talk about some of the issues that have come up from us. For us, and I'd like the record to state that we have been reaching out to the health authority, to the governor's office, to the CCOs, and we've been trying to engage in conversations so that we're able to understand what the objections to this bill are and to find a medium to be able to move forward on behalf of everyone. And I hope these conversations can continue, and that's my greatest desire that they do. It's a very simple bill. There's been a lot of misunderstanding about it, about what it does and what it doesn't do. We have added the Dash 1 Amendment specifically to make sure that the protections that are in place for HERC are still there. One of the earliest things that I did in Oregon was working on the end-of-life cancer issues for Guideline Rule 12. It is the desire that we have that no one is given unnecessary care that they do not need and won't benefit them. What we're talking about now is giving people access to the care that keeps them healthy and keeps them alive without discrimination. We've put the amendments in place so that providers will be able to still make these decisions and they won't circumvent or move or excuse me, run around any of the existing provisions that are in place. The comments made by Director Saxton are interesting, and I just want to address them quickly. Senate Bill 1568 is not House Bill 4107. They're very separate issues. I understand that this is a sort of intellectual game, not unlike the how many angels will fit on the head of a pin, but no one thinks or has any desire to have a bill move forward that would deny people access to treatment, especially people who are struggling with addiction and dependency on opiates. I can't be clear on that. I've lost two friends from opiate addiction and overdose. I do not want to do anything that is going to impede people's access to get to treatment. And quite frankly, it's a little disingenuous and not very nice to think that this is one of the provisions that's being used to move this bill, or excuse me, to keep this bill from moving forward. We're not talking about the Health and Human Services proposed rulemaking. Those rules, based on 1557, are civil rights rules that HHS is undertaking now. We as an organization, as a coalition, are engaged in that rulemaking process and will continue to be. As a gay man, civil rights issues are extremely important to me, but these are two separate issues. I want to thank you for the opportunity to share these comments with you. I apologize. We had a patient advocate from the National Patient Advocate Foundation who was going to testify to you this afternoon, but unfortunately she was not able to stay as late as we had needed her to. And I'm very happy to answer any questions.
We're going to have some other people come up that have strong views on this, even with the Dash 6, so I'd like to have that testimony first and then
bring you back up, Chair.
If we need to have clarification.
Do you want to stand at ease? Courtney wants to see.
Okay. I have to, we're going to stand at ease just for a couple of minutes. Sorry about that, everybody. We will resume the Health Care Committee, and I would like to, who should go next?
Kim
Lowry
and
Madonna McGuire Smith. And this one, Rebecca Vernon?
Well, she's against it.
Oh,
otherwise,
yeah.
Over.
Okay.
These two are still for
okay.
It. Okay.
Good evening, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today in support of Senate Bill 1568. For the record, my name is Kim Lowry, and I'm here on behalf of the Arthritis Foundation, which serves more than 782,000 adults and 3,400 children in Oregon with rheumatic conditions. As a result of the Affordable Care Act, our constituents have the access to coverage for their ongoing health conditions. Mm-hmm. Access to appropriate care and treatment is a game changer for people with arthritis, but it doesn't always mean remission. For many people with arthritis, getting a lower disease state or slowing the progression is the best that we can do right now. We want to make sure they continue to have a chance at better than even when best case isn't possible, as in remission. We urge you to ensure that Oregonians have access to treatment and care throughout their medical journey. On behalf of the Arthritis Foundation, I ask you to support Senate Bill 1568. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, distinguished members of the committee, my name is Madonna McGuire Smith, and I have the privilege of serving as the Executive Director of the Hemophilia Foundation of Oregon, and I am here today to testify in favor of Senate Bill 1568. So thank you for the opportunity to speak with you. The Hemophilia Foundation of Oregon represents nearly 500 families and individuals living with bleeding disorders in Oregon and Southwest Washington. The two main bleeding disorders are hemophilia and von Willebrand's disease. They are inherited bleeding disorders caused by a deficiency in proteins required for normal blood clotting. It is estimated that as many as 70% of all individuals with bleeding disorders who used factor products before 1987 may have been exposed to HIV, and as much as 90% of those were exposed to hepatitis C. About 20,000 people are affected with hemophilia in the United States, and about 1% of the population of the U.S. is affected with von Willebrand's disease. My three children and my husband all live with von Willebrand's disease. So two of my children are severe, meaning they don't clot, they don't stop bleeding. They have to use a blood product that stops that bleeding when there's an injury, and our bills can be more than $150,000 a year per child when we have several incidents in a year. It depends on the year, because we treat with a plasma product, so they only treat when needed. So when there's a severe injury, it takes a lot longer. My son just broke his arm a week and a half ago, so we treated for 8 days straight, and it's about $5,000 a treatment, $5,000 to $6,000 a treatment. So it's relatively expensive. The thing is, because they treat, they're just like other kids all across the United States. They can do all the same things. They can play all the same games, participate in all the same activities. So we're fortunate to be living in the time that we do, because their life expectancy is the same as anyone who doesn't have a bleeding disorder. That hasn't been the case for a long time. So it is now. So the intent of Senate Bill 1568 is to prohibit discrimination based on age, expected length of life, present or predicted disability, degree of medical dependency, or quality of life in determination of medical services. So I would say that the present or predicted disability is something that would be discriminatory for my children, because people could predict that their life could be shorter or could be affected by their bleeding disorder. Therefore, if they were up for some sort of a medical procedure, they could opt out of that. The doctor could, because they could say, well, because of their bleeding disorder, they could potentially have a shorter life. So that's the kind of discrimination that isn't tolerable. Sometimes my kids do experience discrimination that is somewhat tolerable. So I just want to distinguish between the two. There's discrimination that you have to live with because you're born with a certain disease that keeps you from doing certain things. But then there's discrimination that is not tolerable and you shouldn't have to live with, and that is medical care. Everyone should be allowed to have medical care no matter what their situation is. So when it comes to discrimination in medical situations, it's just not acceptable. It is already guaranteed for us in the Affordable Care Act, and it would be difficult to have that taken away. So if we could just write it into statute, it would certainly make my children's life in the future much better, hopefully. So I urge you to consider it and pass it and move it on to Ways and Means. Thank you so much for your time. Do you have any questions?
Were you waiting all afternoon?
Yes, I was waiting all afternoon. That's quite all right. I'm more than happy to talk about my children and their disease. So,
thank you so much for coming. No questions.
This is a panel.
Okay, so this is a panel. Elise Brown, Lisa Tressel, and Jessica Adamson.
Right. She's by herself, so but she's still I can't. Yeah, then it's not the whole panel. I think it is.
Good evening, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Elise Brown for AHIP, America's Health Insurance Plans, here in strong opposition to Senate Bill 1568. So I'm going to be teeing this testimony up, and joining me are two other AHIP members, followed by a panel of three more. So the point is, nearly all of my AHIP Oregon members are here today in opposition to the bill. As mentioned earlier, in Section 1557, on the grounds of four listed civil rights and non-discrimination laws, national origin, sex, disability, and age, ACA prohibits the exclusion, denial of benefits, or discrimination under any health program or activity that receives FFA, which is federal financial assistance. Health plans are already required to comply and have a proven history of compliance with these provisions. And along with that, HHS has a longstanding enforcement authority over these laws. What hasn't been mentioned yet is currently HHS has recently drafted proposed rules to provide consumers and covered entity stakeholders with even more guidance as to the rights and responsibilities in Section 1557. So the rules, the final rules have not been issued yet. And AHIP, on behalf of all of its members across the country, has been an active participant in that process. And we understand that final rules will be issued later this year. So simply suggesting that Senate Bill 1568 is ahead of itself, and if it passes, it's going to amend or extend the definition that HHS is currently considering, and there'll be a cost to that. I'll turn it over to another AHIP member.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jessica Adamson with Providence Health and Services is both a provider and a payer. We respectfully request that no action be taken on Senate Bill 1568 this evening. We believe, as you heard from Elise, that this issue has not, the time has not come yet, that we ought to wait until federal rulemaking is complete and then examine where we are from there and determine whether or not there are any true gaps in Oregon statute that are necessary to address at that time. We would simply ask, in the interest of brevity, not to take action on this bill this evening.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Lisa Trussell with HealthNet Health Plan of Oregon, and our company is very concerned about this legislation going forward, specifically ahead of the federal rules that are currently still under work. They're still creating the federal rules to interpret those sections of the ACA. And then also we're not sure of what unintended consequences there would be to expanding the application of this to areas, types of policies beyond the ones that are identified in the ACA. And one of our main concerns is cost implications going forward, particularly as it may or may not relate to, may relate to pharmaceuticals. So we would ask that we wait and see what the feds finish up first, and as Ms. Adamson suggested, look at where the gaps are in Oregon's law.
Question for the panel? We're a little slow. Okay, thank you. Tom Holt, Pam Levitt, Inga Deckert.
Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Tom Holt with Cambia Health Solutions. We respectfully request that no action be taken on this bill, which we oppose in this short session. As others have mentioned, and I appreciate Mr. Gardner bringing up the fact of Section 1557, which deals with applying civil rights laws to basically all of healthcare, not just insurers, but those who are engaged in the delivery of care, which we're happy to have applied. Our heritage is as a nonprofit company created by lumbermen working together to take care of each other, and it's never crossed our mind to do anything but start with what does our member clinically need, and then we evaluate what's available to help our member get better from there. The bill with the amendment, we believe, really does nothing. It has this wonderfully vague word of reasonable around medical decisions. It seems to us that this bill is entirely designed to create conflict around the difficult medical decisions that have to be made to balance medical need, availability of treatment, and cost. We did do a couple look at just two potential cost impacts of this bill as an example of what concerns us. If we were not able to clinically manage Sovaldi at $60,000 to $80,000 a treatment net of rebates, depending on what a rebate arrangement is, we estimate that it would be, meaning that we would have to provide it to anyone who tested positive versus those who are showing, beginning to show some symptoms and clearly would benefit as opposed to other treatments. That would have about a $45 million impact, or $10 approximately per member per month. For a family of four, that's almost $500 a year. There's a really cool new drug to treat asthma. Gets at the underlying causes of asthma. It's called, if I'm pronouncing this right, Nucala. It's supposed to be for about 5% of asthma patients. Yeah, we have medical policies in place developed in collaboration with specialists in the community to determine who should get this drug, because it sells for about $25,000 a treatment. The impact of that would be around $30 million to our members, or around $8 per member per month. So just those two products for a family of four would have a premium impact of around $860 a year if we just had to hand it out without any restrictions. We think that medical decisions, clinical decisions in these very tricky areas where people clearly need treatment should be made by physicians, not by lawyers and judges in courts. They should be clinically driven, and we, you know, that's what we strive to do today on behalf of our members. And I do want to speak just to, I think, some of the fear that was raised by our friends from the Hemophilia Association. I can't imagine that we would be supportive, or anyone else would be supportive, of the state seeking a waiver of treatment, of life-saving treatment. I'm confident that we would actively work to oppose such a crazy waiver. So with that, I'll stop. The hour is late, but we oppose this, and we respectfully request no action.
Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, my name is Pam Levitt. I'm representing here today Pacific Source Health Plans. We are a not-for-profit company based in Oregon since 1933. We are a community health plan serving commercial Medicare and Medicaid members across the Northwest, and we are also the contracted entity for two of our 16 CCOs in the Columbia Gorge in Central Oregon. In light of how much light we have outside, I will be very brief and let you know that I add to our concerns about Senate Bill 1568. As you have heard, insurers and CCOs are grappling with the realities of escalating health care costs, and nowhere is that more evident than in our prescription drug costs. The bill expands beyond federal ACA language, and if passed, we believe will yield significant increased costs in both the Medicaid budget and commercial insurers in Oregon who absorb these costs through premium rate hikes. Commercial insurers are struggling to keep our premiums affordable under the current federal and state requirements. I do have a lot more material, and I have some charts for you on costs, our pharmacy spend from 2014 to 2015, and I will share those with the committee. I'll just end by saying at the end of the day, we believe that there's a great need for access to affordable health care coverage in Oregon, and unfortunately, we do not believe Senate Bill 1568 gets us there. Thank you.
Good evening, members of the committee. Inga Deckert here for Kaiser Permanente. Kaiser Permanente fully supports the protections in the Affordable Care Act that ensure that our members are able to access medically appropriate care and coverage, including the protections around benefit design that do not discriminate based on an individual's age, expected length of life, disability, degree of medical dependency, quality of life, or other health condition. We oppose Senate Bill 1568, however, because it exceeds the scope of the ACA and is overly broad. Senate Bill 1568 expands the ACA requirements in several ways. It broadens the requirements to include large group plans, certified retainer medical practices, association plans, and brokers. The non-discrimination provisions in the ACA apply to essential health benefit plan design and implementation, while Senate Bill 1568 provisions target services and other aspects of plan-related activities, which would have a substantially different application. And last, Senate Bill 1568, as written, does not contain the provision that's contained in federal law that protects issuers' abilities to appropriately utilize reasonable medical management techniques. I recognize that that is addressed in the Dash 1 amendment, and that may mitigate concerns with respect to that one point, but it doesn't take care of the other concerns that I just mentioned. So we at Kaiser share the concerns that were just raised by my two colleagues here on the panel around cost, and specifically cost to pharmaceuticals and the ability of issuers to manage that. I thought I would just mention a few specific examples about why the application of Senate Bill 1568 as drafted would be problematic in other areas. It may actually restrict an issuer's ability to comply with certain mandates under the ACA. It's drafted so generally that it could prohibit group health plans and issuers from complying with ACA preventative services mandates that are recommendations of the U.S. Preventative Care Task Force that require certain coverages for services based on age. These guidelines make extensive use of age as a factor in determining preventative services that are medically necessary, such as the age to begin colonoscopies or breast cancer screenings. And additionally, Senate Bill 1568 would prevent the application of other ACA requirements. It could prohibit non-grandfathered group health plans and issuers from considering age in determining eligibility for dependent children up to age 26. That's consistent with ACA regulations. It could also prohibit group plans, issuers, and brokers from having discussions with individuals who are 65 years or older about their options for Medicare coverage. And last, Senate Bill 1568 could interfere with the ability of non-grandfathered group plans and issuers to comply with the requirements for fair health insurance premiums under the ACA that allow ratings based on age. So in conclusion, Senate Bill 1568 does not codify federal law. It exceeds the scope of federal law and may actually prevent the application of some ACA requirements. So it is wholly unnecessary, and Kaiser opposes the bill as drafted and the Dash 1 amendment, and we would respectfully request that you take no action on the bill today. Thank you. Be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Thank you. Rebecca Roth, Josh Ballack, Ashlyn Strong.
And then the last two will be Jeremy.
Okay.
Jeremy. It's this letter.
Okay. Rebecca Roth, and I oppose the bill because we've already seen the state take on the power of deciding whether people live or die and take over the healthcare sector, which I feel was a grave problem to our liberty. And when it collapses, we're going to see the state having developed a population that accepts killing agree with the killing. And if you believe that that the state isn't developing the idea of killing, I brought along a group that it has already been decided that they are not worthy of having the state protect them, and that's children through age 9 months in the womb. Their mothers can create contract murders for them, and the state does nothing to protect them. In fact, it pays for them to be killed. And that payment is through all 9 months. If the baby has not yet taken its first breath, the state of Oregon will pay for that baby to be killed. And therefore, you're asking us to trust you to protect us when you're the ones that are killing people here in the state of Oregon and not protecting them. And a while back, I was sitting with the Democrat chief of staff, and I said to him, did you know that in Belgium they're killing children through age 4? And he replied, but only the handicapped. So therefore, the state of Oregon the people who are running the state of Oregon have a comfortableness with allowing people to be killed, just like Terri Schiavo was killed. Terri Schiavo, Rebecca, her family wanted to take her home, and
we need this to be pertinent to this particular bill.
Okay, this is pertinent. Her family wanted to take her home. I don't know if you remember, her husband abused her and beat her up, and then he got the state to kill her. And her family begged for 5 years to take her home and just have her at home. And the state said no, she had to be put on a having no food or water. We wouldn't do that to a dog. And we wouldn't do this to a dog for what we do to our children, ripping their limbs off of them and crushing them, like the Planned Parenthood person was exposed recently, saying that they crush low and they crush high so they can save the organs for sale.
Thank
you guys don't intend to protect us.
Thank you, Rebecca. Okay, Josh Ballack, Ashlyn Strong,
Jeremiah Rigsby.
I don't think Courtney's here, correct?
No, but she's. I convinced her to keep it to three.
Members of the committee, for the record, Josh Ballack, All Care Health. So first off, we oppose SB 1558, and we have serious concerns about its long-term and short-term consequences. One of those major consequences are actually outlined by the Oregon Health Authority's letter that was actually put in, and I think it's important to note that I believe they were commenting on the Dash 1 amendments, that it did not take care of the those concerns that they had, and I think that's important to make sure that that's clear. And those consequences are that we are messing with a very careful balance between federal law, state law, ethical guidelines, 25 years worth of work around the Health Evidence Review Commission and creating the prioritized list. And I think it's really important that as the cost of drugs have continued to escalate, with some of these breakthrough drugs that are really just amazing, but with huge price tags attached to them, now more than ever, clarity about how we do these things and how that ends up happening has got major financial implications. And we want to make sure that, and I think it's also important to note that it's not just these big blockbuster drugs. We're watching generics go up as well. So we've got to have this clarity. It's really clear that drug prices are going to continue to go up. And I think as most recent revelations have shown, that there are some drug companies out there that don't have the patient's interest necessarily at their best heart, that they actually did look at profit before they cared about affordability. And I think it's important that that Oregon have the clarity and put into context so that we can manage these drugs going really well. I think it's become abundantly clear tonight that this bill doesn't have consensus, that you haven't been able to find there, and that the Oregon Health Authority still does oppose the bill. So thank you.
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ashlyn Strong, and I represent HealthShare of Oregon. We are a coordinated care organization serving low-income members in Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties. HealthShare echoes the concerns that the other CCOs and insurers have raised. As you are aware, CCOs are held to a 3.4% per member per month spending growth rate on an annual basis. Last year, with the full complement of reasonable utilization management techniques available to us under current law, HealthShare's pharmaceutical costs increased by over 20%. Pharmaceutical costs alone accounted for more than 85% of HealthShare's total spending growth over the last year. We are concerned that the costs of removing reasonable utilization management techniques, which is what this bill would do, will be untenable for the Oregon Health Plan. Thank you.
Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, my name is Jeremiah Rigsby. I represent Care Oregon. We own Columbia Pacific CCO and Jackson Care Connect, and we're a member of HealthShare. I echo a lot of the comments that have been made by members of the healthcare industry and our opposition of the bill as drafted in the Dash 1 amendment. At Care Oregon, about one in every four, maybe one in every five of our members is a minority. We believe in using our CCOs and using the work we're doing to get rid of disparities and health disparities that we see amongst different minority groups. We think that's exciting work. We think that's exactly what CCO should be doing. When I read this bill that is billed as getting rid of discrimination, I don't see the discrimination that is happening or that is claimed to be happening within our CCOs. As an African-American, I'm well aware of what discrimination looks like. And as an African-American who lost a mom to cancer after trying to get medicine and exhausting all of our resources, I'm well aware of what it's like to try to find medicine with no money and want access to medicine to help keep someone alive. This bill, as we see it, would keep us from accomplishing what we set out to do with the triple aim, which is not an easy or fun thing to do. It's not about being mean or nice. It's about making a population healthier while keeping costs in mind. And we do that, and the constituents that are represented by 1 in 4, the people that we are most attracted to because we want to solve those issues in the most effective way and make the population more healthy. We don't think this bill allows us to do that. And we are trying to solve a number of issues, including opiate addiction and opiate abuse. And we're working in Jackson County, for example, with Jackson Care Connect. We're working with All Care. We have a program that helps address what we see as rampant opiate abuse, which we would not be able to implement if this bill passed the way we read it. I think, to be clear, there's a fundamental disagreement about what this bill does. There is what the healthcare industry is saying that this bill does, and there is what the proponents of this bill say that the legislation will do. And with such a disagreement, I'm not sure that we should move a bill forward quickly, whether it's tonight, whether it's in the session. I do think, though, that CCOs are more than open to a conversation about how to end discrimination with the way in which pharmaceuticals are dispensed, with the way in which medicine and therapies are dispensed, and we welcome that conversation in the interim. Thank you.
Lynn Saxton's letter was referenced, dated, is today the 11th? It's dated February 11th. And it should be an OLIS for you. And is there someone here from the health authority that would like to comment on that, particular? Basically, let's see, what should I talk about here? They go into the waiver, the proponents are raising concerns that protection in federal law could be waived beginning in 2017. They have, they've given their statement on that. They say the federal government also requires waiver requests to be made available for public comment before they are submitted. So that gives, I guess, us the opportunity to do that. And then they talk about age, when it would be appropriate to use age, talking about knee replacement in teenagers are generally not considered appropriate because they have to be replaced multiple times over the course of one's life. That's just one example they gave. And so I think I'm going to make this easy. Oh, well, and then they say, finally, it should be noted the federal government is currently undergoing rulemaking to implement a separate set of anti-discrimination provisions in the ACA not addressed in this bill that prohibit discrimination based on race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability. And we will be, Lynn saying, we will be reexamining Oregon age and disability protections once these comprehensive federal regulations become final in a few months. So I think I'm going to make this, unless I hear differently from the committee, make this easy for everyone. I think that there's enough concern from the Oregon Health Authority and the CCOs and the carriers that I'm not going to open a work session. I think that everybody has heard now the concerns, and I know this issue is not dead yet. I know this will be something that will be taken up in 2017. Senator Steiner Hayward.
Just a really quick comment, if I might, Madam Chair. I agree with your decision to not move this forward tonight because there is so much disagreement about this. I'll say publicly, as I've said before, I live with some of the illnesses that could be affected by this, and I am acutely sensitive, as Mr. Rigsby is, to some of the issues that are potentially addressed by this legislation. That being said, I do believe that federal protections are strong. I worry a lot about Oregon law being in conflict with federal law. I don't see evidence that this is happening thus far. If it is, I want to know about it. And I want to know about it right away, and I will make a very large fuss. And so I'm not seeing it. I'm not hearing about it. If it's happening out there, please tell me. I do want to see what the federal rulemaking looks like. I do want to see what OHA's response to that federal rulemaking is like. And this committee is concerned about the potential for inappropriate denial of care. We do, however, believe in evidence-based care. We do believe in appropriate stepwise therapy. And to put on my physician hat for 1 minute, I worry about people strongly requesting, I have people come in all the time requesting medications that really aren't the right choice for them. But this, passing this bill could put us in a really untenable position where we could be forced to prescribe medications that aren't actually in our patient's best interest, out of fear that we would be taken forward on a claim of denying service based on any one of the criteria put here. So I appreciate very, very much the concerns put forward by the advocates of this bill. I'm just not ready to go there yet.
Any other comments? Thank you, everyone. Thank you for staying so late. I apologize for us being so late in the day. I will close the public hearing on 1568, and we are adjourned.